The Hayes Advantage with Kathleen Hayes and Vonnie Quinn. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
Michael Schlachter, Chief Meteorologist of Weather 2000.
My
meteorological
pleasure.
Consulting firm for the energy and commodity trading, insurance and weather risk management industries. Gosh, didn't realize that there was a weather risk management industry all of its own, but I guess it makes sense with, most people in Chicago needing to know what the weather's going to be like in 6 months.
Absolutely. Weather is headline news right now for all markets.
And of course, commodities, energy usage, what's happening to crops, what's happening to cattle. We're already seeing the impact of this, aren't we, Matthew?
Absolutely. And what's amazing is that this winter started early, consistent, and it's going to be a long one, according to our research.
Now, this polar pig, exactly what is it? Why was it called a polar pig, and how long is it going to last?
That's actually kind of a humorous term that was coined over a decade ago by some fun weathermen. But actually, to be technical, this air mass is even colder than polar air. It's actually Arctic in nature. And we pretty much have had some teleconnection patterns, so to speak, that got their gears rolling in late October. Lots of cold air to tap into in Canada. And there's really no end in sight in terms of the cyclical nature of this. A lot of folks will look at the warm days that we occasionally have, including the reprieve coming up here this coming weekend, as perhaps a positive sign. But we've had several of those since Halloween time. And all it does is allow the cold air to replenish itself up in Canada and come down time and time again.
So this is almost like sort of the cold version of El Nino, is that it?
Actually, it's funny you bring that up, because the kind of prevailing thought from a lot of short-term forecasters was that we would have a very El Nino and warm winter forecast this year, and our research was actually kind of countering that. There's some interesting things going on in the Indian Ocean and whatnot that were countering that typical El Nino response. We actually are neutral in the ENSO phase, and therefore there's really no El Nino influences in the short-term horizon.
So what do you do? You're a chief meteorologist at Weather 2000. You said you went against the grain and you didn't see the warming of trend of an El Nino. How does your technology, how does your system differ from the other systems we see that are, the results are reported on television? We read them on weather.com and websites like that.
Well, I think the analogy is similar to like the field of medicine. There's different subspecialties, and just as you wouldn't necessarily go to a podiatrist if you had a head issue, same thing with weather. There's tornado forecasters, short-term forecasters, and we here happen to be climate scientists, so we kind of focus on that multiple week to multiple month horizon. And our research kind of looks at various ocean atmospheric teleconnections that kind of get their gears going in the autumn and set the kind of the pillars to what the winter is going to be. Not day by day, of course. We can't anticipate single day weather beyond about 2 weeks. But the overall kind of monthly and multiple week patterns were set out a few months ago.
So can you put this in the broader context? Because there's already, of course, this is leading to debates or commentary like, well, gee, how could we have global warming if we're having such a cold winter, which is then countered by, well, this is part of the impact of global warming, that you see these extremes, you see very volatile weather patterns, because as the climate warms, it changes the jet stream, et cetera.
Yeah, I think the debate, unfortunately, is a little bit politicized, and unfortunately, a lot of the people who are kind of responding and counter-responding, like you were saying, are kind of missing the forest for the trees. There's the separate topic of global warming, which we really need to kind of look at the Earth as a whole for multiple decades going forward, and then separate that from kind of the individual climate cycles that happen on a seasonal or monthly scale. So just as a 100-degree day in New York in July doesn't validate global warming, neither does a cold day disvalidate it, or invalidate it, rather. And therefore, we kind of need to separate the big picture from the short picture. So every once in a while, we have these kind of wild patterns, and this just happens to be a very harsh winter for North America east of the Rockies, but there's other parts of the world that are having very mild winter patterns right now.
Yeah, and the other thing is that we didn't have a bad hurricane season at all. Compared to last year in particular, it seemed like it was hurricane after hurricane last year, and we haven't really seen that this year. So, these telecommunications, or what did you call it?
Teleconnections.
Teleconnections. What decides that on a yearly basis? Is it the moons? Is it the way the Earth shifts on its axis?
Well, it's actually very interesting you bring up that point about the hurricane season, because a lot of the ocean atmospheric responses that we see going on in, you know, the Indian Ocean, the Pacific, the Atlantic, that actually led to very few hurricanes in the Atlantic, and actually the first season since 1994 that we didn't have a major hurricane in the Atlantic Basin. Lo and behold, this is also some of the coldest temperatures we've seen since the winter of 1994, 20 years ago. A lot of these things are kind of interconnected in terms of the steering currents, where the jet stream patterns lie, and there are these little kind of, think of them as like boulders or ridges, you know, within a stream of water that can kind of block the flow of the atmosphere, if you think of the atmosphere like a river. And where those boulders set up can kind of funnel cold air down on a pretty consistent basis.
Wow.
And that's the kind of theory behind these teleconnections, where they will be semi-permanent throughout the winter season.
So does your, how about your demand as a company? Are you finding that this is the kind of winter, I would assume you're suddenly getting a lot more clients? Do they, you know, or is this a growing field? Are you finding over the past 10, 20 years, as people become more concerned about climate and the costs, insurance costs, et cetera, that your business has gradually grown?
Yeah, I think the expansion of a variety of industries are starting to realize the impact of weather on the bottom line. I think the energy and insurance and agricultural fields have actually quantified this connection for multiple decades, but some of the more tangential industries are starting to come along on board. In terms of our existing clients, they've obviously been informed of this many months ago, so they're kind of just kind of keeping up with the reminders and our alerts that this isn't ending and there's still some time to go. In terms of potential clients out there, our role is really to help them weed through the superfluous information, the kind of all the static and noise and a lot of misinformation, and kind of separate fact from fiction and rumor from reality.
Michael Schlachter, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Chief Meteorologist at Weather 2000, a consulting firm for the energy and commodity trading, insurance and weather risk management industries, looking at the impact of the polar pig.
The Hayes Advantage, weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, in New York on Bloomberg 1130, in Boston on 1200 a.m. and 94.5 FM HD2, or on SiriusXM Satellite Radio Channel 119. Copyright 2014, Bloomberg LP.